This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Ecclesiastes. Today, Pastor Sandy will be teaching in Ecclesiastes chapter 8.
So here's the balance Solomon is saying we need to grasp for ourselves. Don't give in to failure. But when you do fail, don't let failure bury you. That's the balance. We're all humans in need of God's grace. We can never forget that. Don't give in to failure, but when you do fail, don't let it bury you. This is a father's job in the life of his kids. Son, you can do it. You can do it. You can do it. Then when he doesn't, it's okay, son. There'll be other days. You know, you'll bat again. Don't worry about that strikeout. You know, that's the fatherly instinct God is sharing with us here. There's a great balance here that we need to reach in our lives. You know, we all are going to fail at times, but don't let that failure bury you and stifle you. I think this says it best. Christians aren't sinless, but they will sin less and less as they grow. That's the balance. Well, he says in verse 19, wisdom strengthens the wise more than 10 rulers of the city, for there is not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. Once again, he said, there are no perfect people. Also, do not take to heart everything people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. This is great advice here. You know, you can't shut people's mouths, but you can shut your own ears. Disgruntled employees make all kinds of statements about their boss. Have you noticed this? Which may or may not be true. An employee gets denied vacation. Oh, he's such a terrible, terrible boss. Whereas 9 out of 10 people probably would have made the same decision as the boss. But when you hear the employee grumble and complain, you'd think that the boss was a merciless tyrant. I mean, Pastor James wants vacation. I tell him, James, you can't take vacation every other week. But then he goes off and talks to you, and you hear him complaining and grumbling. Think that mean Pastor Sandy. Whereas if you were in the same situation, you'd agree with me. Be careful. Consider the source and don't draw conclusions without all the facts. He says, do not take to heart everything people say. That's good advice. Verse 22, for many times also your own heart has known that even you have cursed others. You know, we've all been on both ends of that stick, haven't we? Where things that were not true were said of us, but then there's been times when we've said things of other people that weren't true as well. We should take heed to Solomon's warnings, since we all know how easy it is to jump to the wrong conclusions. He says, all this I have proved by wisdom. I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. You know, here's another trail that turned up a dead end for Solomon. He knows the value of wisdom, but he's not always been wise. He was the wisest man who ever lived, but he acted foolishly at times, and this frustrated him. He says, as for that which is far off and exceedingly deep, who can find it out? In other words, wisdom was elusive even for me. Like everything else he had tried, he realized that wisdom wasn't the ultimate answer. He said, I applied my heart to know, to search and seek out wisdom and the reason of things, to know the wickedness of folly, even of foolishness and madness. You recall Solomon's story. You remember God came to him and granted him one request. Here it is, Solomon. You got a blank check. Just fill it in. Whatever you choose, it'll be granted. And you remember the king's choice. It was a wise choice. He chose not riches, not power, not long life, but he wanted wisdom. Wisdom to rule justly and righteously. But here's what derailed the good outcome that wisdom promises. Verse 26, he says, and I find more bitter than death the woman whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are fetters. He who pleases God shall escape from her, but the sinner shall be trapped by her. Oh my. Feminine charms have often nullified a man's wisdom. Well, Solomon is saying that women can trump wisdom. That's what he's saying. The allure of a woman can turn the wisest man into a blubbering idiot. Have you noticed this? This is what happened to Solomon, was it not? He started out so well, but his expanding harem overwhelmed his wisdom and led him away from God and down a road of vain pursuits. The lust for women can trump wisdom. It gets into a man's head, begins to make bad decisions, strange decisions, weird decisions. Guy was going great until he met that girl. Oh my, that's why it's so important who you marry. That you marry a woman who keeps you on the right track. Because once you fall in love like that, she can take you down whatever road she wants to take you, man. She can just steer you. She can play you. She can manipulate you. She's got you tied to her little finger. You're on a string from then on out. So make sure you're careful as to whose string you get tied to, okay? Verse 27. Here is what I have found, says the preacher, adding one thing to the other to find out the reason which my soul still seeks, but I cannot find. One man among a thousand I have found, but a woman among all these I have not found. Wow. Solomon's experiences had soured his attitude toward women, had they not? You know, he says, I've looked and I can find one wise man among a thousand, but I've never been able to find a wise woman. That's what he's saying. Now, this is not necessarily God's opinion, understand. But this was certainly Solomon's opinion. In fact, listen to these verses in the Living Bible. They come out interesting. It says, this is my conclusion, says the preacher. Step by step, I came to this result after researching in every direction. 0.1% of the men I interviewed could be said to be wise, but not one woman. Let this be a lesson to the single women. Think this through with me, ladies. Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. What was a concubine? It was a sexifier. Kind of like a pacifier, but just a sexifier. That's what a concubine was, kind of a stripper girlfriend. That's what a concubine was. Understand this. There were 1,000 women at Solomon's disposal every single day of his life, every single evening of his life. And since he is king, none of these girls are going to say no to him, which proves this. You can give a man all the free sex he can handle, and it will not increase his respect for women. Think that through. This man has such a low view of women. He says, I can't find any wise woman. Evidently, all of his free sex, evidently, all of the women at his disposal didn't increase his view of women. As a matter of fact, it decreased his view of them. It devalued them in his mind. You see, just the opposite is true. When men use women for sex, they don't respect them. They use them. You don't respect what you use and what you manipulate. Solomon is great proof here. He has all these women at his disposal. He's got all this free sex available to him, but it doesn't translate into a greater respect for women. Just the opposite is true. It causes him to disrespect women to the point to where he says, I can't even know a wise woman. Interesting. Verse 29, truly this only I have found, that God made man upright, but they have sought out many schemes. Oh my, man's our own prior. The reason we got such a mess around us, it's our own fault, he's saying. God made life perfect. It's not his fault that the world has gone haywire. Man created the mess that he's in. Well, chapter 8 says, who is like a wise man, and who knows the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the sternness of his face is changed. You know, a wise man knows not to take life under the sun so seriously. He can laugh at himself. He's a man who becomes grateful for small favors. You know, the wise man has lowered his expectations for life and intensified his hunger for God. Did you know this is one of the keys to your happiness? Is lowering your expectations of life, but intensifying your hunger for God. Verse 2, I say, keep the king's commandment for the sake of your oath to God. Now, we all are under some authority in our life. Either the government or our boss or our husband or our parents. The Bible teaches obedience to authority. But there are limits to our obedience. Ephesians 6 verse 1 tells us, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. But note the parameters there, in the Lord. No child is required to obey an illegal or an immoral or an unbiblical command. The same is true in a wife's obligation to her husband. The same is true in a nation's subordination to its leaders. You remember when Peter was commanded by the Jewish leaders not to speak anymore in the name of Jesus, he responded, we ought to obey God rather than men. At times, it is our duty to rebel against authority. Thomas Jefferson put it, resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. And yet, practically, as a worker, as a wife, as a child, as a citizen, how far are we required to go in obedience to authority? And the next 8 verses provide us some helpful principles here. Verse 3, do not be hasty to go from his presence. Now, there may come a time when civil disobedience is called for, but don't be quick to pull the trigger, he's saying. First, make sure that you exhaust all of the legal channels available to you first. You remember, recall Daniel's response when the Babylonian king ordered him on the non-kosher diet? You know, rather than immediately rebel against the command, he was respectful. He appeared before the king's servant and he offered an alternative. And an exemption was granted. So his first advice to us is when it comes to authority and rebelling against authority, don't be hasty here to go from his presence. Be respectful. Don't just be rebellious. Also, he says, do not take your stand for an evil thing for what he does, for he does whatever pleases him. In other words, when you resist authority, make sure that you're on the side of righteousness, not evil. That your cause is good and godly. Verse 4, where the word of a king is, there is power. And who may say to him, what are you doing? In other words, even in dissent, you know, you can respect the role of the king. I mean, he's the king. Disagree with his policies if you like, but don't disrespect his position. He's still the king. He still has authority over you. He says, he who keeps his command will experience nothing harmful. In other words, obey the laws and you'll have no problem. Son, just remember, if you drive a speed limit, you don't have to worry about the police. I wish I had a quarter for every time I've said that. And a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment, because for every matter there is a time and a judgment, though the misery of man increases greatly. You know, there may come a time when we need to express our dissidence. But wisdom looks for the right time, in the right place, in the right way. Yes, your misery may be increasing greatly. But catch your boss at the right time, approach him in the right way, and you'll get better results than if you catch him at the wrong time and approach him in the wrong way. Learn how to appeal to authority, he's saying. Verse 7, for he does not know what will happen, so who can tell him when it will occur? And it was wait for the right time, and you may just find that some situations take care of themselves. You may not even need to act. Verse 8, no one has power over the spirit to retain the spirit, and no one has power in the day of death. There is no release from that war, and wickedness will not deliver those who are given to it. Here's another point. No one has absolute control over another man. There are limits to authority. Death takes orders from no one, not even the king, not even the president. God dictates when a man is born and when a man dies. Life and death are God's domain, not the king's. There are limits. Verse 9, all this I have seen and applied my heart to every work that is done under the sun. There is a time in which one man rules over another to his own hurt. Oh my, that's tax time. That's April 15th. Now, Romans 13 teaches us that God uses the governing authorities to keep order. But the fact that he does doesn't guarantee the government's efficiency or its wisdom or its benevolence. He's saying bad government is still God's representative. You know, this is what blows our minds. God is willing to use evil rulers and wasteful government. Don't forget this. When you consider how far do I have to go in obeying the government, remember that Paul wrote to the Romans about obedience and submission when the government at his time, in his day, was the most evil man to probably ever sit on a throne. It was the Emperor Nero, who was a horrendous fella, murdered his wife and mother to protect his throne, took Christians, burned them at the stake to light his nighttime revelries, clothed them in animal skins, and then threw them to the wild dogs to watch them get mauled. This was Nero. God still uses government, even evil government. Verse 10, then I saw the wicked buried who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and they were forgotten in the city where they had so done. This also is vanity. Solomon here mentions the hypocrite. He was wicked at heart, but he never missed a trip to the temple to practice his religion. In fact, he played at religion. But once he died, he was forgotten. And his so-called religion and worship was nothing but vanity, he says. Verse 11, because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily. You know, you run that red light, you may think you got away with it. You just breathe a sigh of relief. You can go home. I beat that red light. And you can be happy for the next, week or so until you get that letter in the mail with a little picture of your car and your bumper sticker and your teenage son in the front driver's seat. It makes you so mad. But you thought you got away with it, you know, but you didn't. You see, what a man sows, he reaps. It's true. What a man sows, he reaps. The problem is you don't always harvest in the same season that you sow. There's a delay. There's an in-between time between sowing the seed and reaping the bounty. And this in-between time, it can embolden the evil man. For he thinks he's gotten away with his crimes, his sin. Whereas this can discourage the good man. Because he thinks, I've done right, and there's no reward. God doesn't care. Both men need to be aware. There is a payday. One day. Verse 12. Though a sinner does evil 100 times, and his days are prolonged. In other words, he thinks he's outwitting God. Yet I surely know that it will be well with those who fear God, who fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked, nor will he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he does not fear before God. His judgment will come. There is a vanity which occurs on earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said that this also is vanity. The wicked prosper, the righteous suffer. It's such a cause for irritation and frustration, and it adds to life's confusion, Solomon says. Solomon knows that there's going to be a heavenly, eternal judgment above the sun one day. But in the here and now, in the right now, this whole perplexity adds to life's frustration and to its meaninglessness. And this quandary is never better seen than in our judicial system. This gets real frustrating. Wicked men drag out their cases with endless appeals. They often walk away on a technicality. It's terrible. It just adds to the meaninglessness of life. Robert Frost defined a jury as follows: 12 persons chosen to decide who has the best lawyer. That's what it's come to today. And when we see this, it's just so frustrating. Verse 15, he says, "So I commended enjoyment, because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry, for this will remain with him in his labor all the days of his life, which God gives him under the sun." Solomon has failed in his existentialist exercise. He's looked for some transcendent meaning to life under the sun, but he's come up empty. Life is so frustrating, he says, you might as well just enjoy whatever pleasure life may afford you. And so, go home tonight and eat a big bowl of ice cream. Forget about your diet. Who cares? Just eat some Breyers ice cream on your way home tonight. Go by the store and buy Breyers. Don't buy the cheap Kroger brand. Buy Breyers. Get the real thing, baby. Put it on your credit card. Who cares? Don't drink the cheap Maxwell House that you buy. Go out tonight and buy you a $5 cup of coffee. Go to Starbucks. I call it $5 because there's nothing there less than $5. But go out and drink a $5 cup of coffee. Enjoy your life, man. Enjoy it while you can, he says. "For when I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on earth, even though one sees no sleep day or night, then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun." He said, "I searched 24/7 for some purpose in life. I stayed up day and night looking for answers, but I found none. Life is just a tangled knot." That's what he says. "For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it." Chapter 9. "For I considered all this in my heart, so that I could declare it all, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. People know neither love nor hatred by anything they have seen before them." In other words, on the surface, life just doesn't make sense sometimes. 2 + 2 doesn't always equal 4. The dots don't always connect. Life can be a riddle. It can be a quandary, like a Rubik's Cube. Life can be an unsolvable puzzle. And you'll walk away from life sometimes just scratching your bald spot. You know, Moses concluded as much. He noted that there were truths impossible for man to comprehend. In Deuteronomy 29, verse 29, he says, "The secret things belong to the Lord." There's some things that only God understands. A finite man will struggle to know an infinite God and all his wisdom. You know, Solomon's response to life's perplexity, catch this, is to accept it as is. He just takes life as is. He worked hard. And what came to him fairly and righteously, he enjoyed it to the fullest. But he left the problem of pain and suffering and all the other unanswerable questions, he just left it to God. Sometimes that's all we can do. Is we take life for what it is. You know, it is what it is. How many times have you said that? And sometimes you just got to take life for what it is and take from it what God gives you and enjoy it and then leave the unanswered questions to God. That's the best way to cope.
What you heard was just one message from a series going through the book of Ecclesiastes. It's said that Solomon authored this book, and there's plenty of life experience that he pulled from to script the book of Ecclesiastes. Many might have thought that Solomon had it all. He had wisdom, treasures, power, respect. But he came to a point in life where the clarity came into focus. All of those earthly accolades only got him so far. He realized that without God, all that the world could offer was simply meaningless. Do you relate to any of this today? Perhaps you're searching for meaning in life and coming up empty. God wants a relationship with you that will provide meaning and pleasure in a way that's beyond the world's scope. Keep reading and learning from this Old Testament book. We trust that God will speak to you. Sandy Adams Radio is an outreach ministry of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. If you're curious what we're all about, click the About tab at sandyadams.org. Then just scroll down and click on the Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain link. You can also hear more messages through Facebook, podcasts, and our very own Sandy Adams mobile app. We want to give you as many tools as possible to help you in your relationship with Jesus. From all of us here, we're thankful for you, and we look forward to you joining us again on Sandy Adams Radio.